I didn't feel threatened by them. And even they did hit me. I think I got hit 3 times, you know, cleanly, really nice. So they could, they did very, I think they're very strong actually. But I didn't feel that they were semi against me. So even though they hit me, I felt that I was actually in control. And that I don't say it's lucky that they got lucky strikes at all, you know, but it just didn't feel like I had been beaten first and then hit. And I also felt that when I did strike, when I did make a cut, that it actually counted. So what I was trying to do in my grading was what I do in training every day with the students. You do get hit because they're fast and they're very athletic. And if you have, for example, empty semi, so even though you feel like you're going forward, if it's empty, you're going to get hit. But what I always concentrate on in my kegel with the students is, you know, if you get hit, then that's good. They're telling me that that was empty. So still, what I try, regardless if I get hit or I get hit, the most important thing that I concentrate on in my kendo is with the university students is to always keep the pressure on them, always hone in on them and make them feel that they either have to hit or they have to move back.
Right.
And when they get confused or pissed off, that's when I hit them.
Right.
And when I do hit them, the really important thing is to always, for me anyway, is to have perfect posture on the strike.
Right.
So perfect posture before, during, and after the strike, regardless of whether you hit the opponent or you get hit.
Right.
And if you get hit or you make the strike, no more wasted movement after that. So that's the kind of thing when I train with the students, I'm always thinking of. And they're very good teachers to me.
Right.
Because when I do sort of let my guard down a little bit, or my posture is off a little bit, bang, they'll hit me straight away. Semi is just such a complicated thing because, it's what they're really looking for in maybe fourth dan, fifth dan is the start of an understanding of semi. Sixth dan you have to be, really understand it. Seventh dan you have to be able to be on top of it. And hachidan, I don't know.
Who knows?
But semi, it's like a lot of people think that, man, it's semi. It's not semi. Okay. Or stepping in is not semi. Semi is maintaining that distance. Okay, that striking distance. And as you advance slowly to a position or a distance which is sometimes called the spill point. That's the point of no return. That is the do or die distance.
Right.
Okay. Now, what does your opponent do? Does he go back? If he starts going back, bang. If he starts coming forward, bang. Okay, so you're always completely on top of them with your ki, with your feeling, with your intention, and with your waza, and with your shinai. Okay? You are, at the basic level, trying to make them react in some way so that you can create an opening. That's at the lowest level. The highest level, I think, is you are trying to make them react in a way, but you preempt that reaction. So if you can imagine, it's like a billiard ball.
Mm-hmm.
One side of the billiard ball is black, and the other side is white, if you can imagine that.
Yeah.
And when the billiard ball, when the black is on the top, okay, if you apply semi, that billiard ball will start to turn, and when it's white, that's when they do a reaction.
Okay.
Okay? If it is turned white already, even though you've put the semi on it, and then they attack you, then you have lost. That is empty semi.
Hmm.
Okay, because it's too late. They've already, the ball has turned round, bang, they're on you. So what you're aiming for with the semi, with your feeling, you know, with your spirit, with your, with the way in which you approach them, and enter the maoi to the spill point, is you want to strike as the black is just about to turn to white. Bang.
Mm.
Okay, and that is perfect debana, for example. Okay, and that's just when, just as the movement is just about to start, or their feeling is just about, bang. Okay, so semi is not only moving in to create the opening, it's also striking at that opening at the optimum, the perfect timing. And so some people just think, oh, if I step in, he moved. Oh, that was strong semi. But if you didn't do anything, it's empty.
Right.
Okay, or just moving forward, or just doing lots of ki moving forward. That's not necessarily a semi. That's the very start of semi. Right. But the semi has to come as a complete package, moving in, reading their mind, understanding how they're going to react, and making them react, and just as about their react, then take the initiative and strike. That's really the ideal, if you like. There are other forms also, like, you know, you have sen and gono sen. Just to create, like when I'm fighting with students, I know that if I make a slight movement, they're going to react really quickly. Okay, I know that. And I know they're very fast. Okay, so I'm always ready for that. But sometimes they get me off balance, even though I'm trying. I can know that they're going to attack. They get me off balance. So then I'll try and make sure that my body is out of the way with you know, taking care of a maoi. And when they're fully extended into their attack, bam, bam, do gono sen. So also that is also very, I think, good semi. That was the kind of thing that I was trying to do in the second matchup by Nanadan grading, for example, to bring the opponent to make him attack. And when he's extended, do gono sen. So there are many different variations of semi, but the important thing is to make sure that you are always in control.
Right.
Okay, so it's really a problem of the mind in that respect. I don't think it's because I'm a seventh dan or whatever, certainly because I train a lot.
Right.
Probably most importantly because I'm old. Well, I'm getting older. Okay, so I'm 40 now, which, you know, I'm in the second half of my life now, right? Finished the first half, had my oranges at halftime break. Now I'm going into the second half. But the point of age is an important factor, because of your life experience,
right?
Your maturity as a result of your life experience, the way in which you are able to detach yourself from things. Okay, when you're young, you get pissed off really quickly, and you've got to react, and you're always trying to sort of, you know, you're always trying to be active.
Right.
But when you get older, it's like you realise that physically, and also mentally or spiritually, that you can't be engaged all the time.
Right.
Okay, and especially when you've reached the age of 40, you've got your family to worry about, you've got your job to worry about, you've got all your responsibilities and stuff. So you have to be able to know how to control your emotions more, and also, sort of maneuver yourself spiritually in a way that's not going to always put you on the firing line. And that sort of coincides also with the physical aspects, because as you get older, your speed, your strength, fortunately in my case it's not bad at the moment, but your eyesight starts to deteriorate. It's just a natural, I don't like to admit it, but I can tell you now that say when I was in my mid-20s, when I was 25, 15 years ago, a little bit of a twinge in my leg after a hard training be gone in a day. Now it's it hangs around for a week and it worries me. Okay, little injuries, what used to be little injuries, last a long time. And so as a natural way of dealing with this natural deterioration, because it is natural, you have to start devising ways in which you can preserve your energy, both physical and mental. Okay, that's life. No? It's called wisdom. And it's really evident when you're training with students, because, what, they're 20.
Yeah.
They're fast. They're really athletically gifted, you know, really flexible. They're just like firecrackers, right? They're machines. Bam! Off they go. If you try and compete with that, you're going to get injured. And you're going to get beat up. Okay, so you have to adapt. As your physical side starts to deteriorate, you have to make up for it. You have to compensate for it with other areas. And funnily enough, even though it's, you don't have to do that when you're young, because you have your speed, you have your reach, and you can rely on that to hit people. That's fine. That's great. In fact, the more that you do that, the more your body becomes ingrained with the kendo movement and the kendo spirit. So that's a really important part. But as you get older, you can't do that. So what do? You have to think of ways in which you can dominate your opponent without relying on your physical or lack of physical strength. And the easiest way, or the obvious way of doing that, is to control them with your superior strength of mind. Which is based on your experience. You are reducing the superfluous movement in your mind and in your body. You're getting rid of anything you don't need. You're streamlining it. Okay, and that's where your semi starts to become more focused. Like that, out of necessity. If I could have the body of a young athlete for my whole life, then I'd probably just be trying to hit them from every direction, every angle possible. But I can't do that, so I have to develop. And it's through that necessity, if you want to continue your kendo, you have to develop like that. That's when you start understanding the different world of semi.
Right.
And you think, wow, if I do that, then he's going to do that. But he knows I'm going to do that, so I can do that. And you start thinking ahead, and you start using your brain more. Use your brain to compensate for your physical drop off and so on. So, in that sense, because I'm 40, I'm only just starting to really understand or feel this world. And if you look at young Hachidans, you know, gorgeous, you know, 50 years old or 60 years old, obviously they've taken that up to a completely new level. Something that I'm nowhere near. Yeah, but I can understand now a little bit why they are so good. It's because they've got rid of all the wasted stuff, and then what is left is the lean, mean, total focus and concentration with no wasted movement.
Right. Because you started kendo when you were 18.
17.
Yeah. And after that, you had to go back to New Zealand for a while.
Yeah.
And you created a kendo club.
Yep.
And you didn't have people to train with, experienced people. And you went back to Japan again. And how long did you stay?
The second time was for 2 years.
2 years.
Yep.
And if I remember correctly, you trained very hard during that time.
Yeah.
You went everywhere.
Yeah. The second trip to Japan, I went to the International Budo University for, I don't know, 7 or 8 months or something. I also trained in a machi dojo in Saitama for a little while. And then for the last year, I went to Itami, where the Shubukan dojo was.
That's where we met.
Where you came from.
Yeah.
And so I trained there for 1 year with Tsurumaru sensei and Murayama sensei. And that was also not only kendo, but also iaido and naginata. Well, I think that, as you say, mostly Japanese people, they start when they're knee-high to a grasshopper, right?
Yeah.
Little kids, and they go crazy when they're elementary school and junior high and high school and university. And so if you think of it like that, you think, wow, gee, they've got so much experience. No wonder they're good.
Yeah.
But I don't think you have to think like that at all, because age is the great equalizer. Okay. And what, you know, when you start doing kendo when you're young, you do young kendo. So if you start at primary school, you do primary school kendo, then you do junior high school kendo, then you do high school kendo. And as we're talking about before, when you're young, you're very athletic, you're very fit. Your body is able to recover very quickly, and you can do all sorts of attacks from such a long way away, and you're so fast. Must look amazing to people who are just starting kendo and maybe in the middle age, and you think, oh God, I can never do that. Oh well, I guess I'll never really be good at kendo. But that's wrong, because what you'll find, even if you start kendo when you're 5 years old and you can do all these amazing techniques and you're really great at shiai and stuff, as you get older, what's really interesting is gradually people start moving back to the basics.
Right.
People start with the basics, mang, 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 or kote, do, whatever. And then as you start getting a little bit cheekier and a little bit more confident, you bang, you're doing all this sort of stuff, right? But as I was saying before, as you get older, because your body can't deal with that anymore, you actually start coming back. And that's when you start to realize that the strongest kind of kendo is mang. It doesn't even matter about speed. You go up against an old sensei, he'll stand at you and he'll just go, man. And he'll go, bum. It's like, how the hell did that happen, man? Okay. So the important thing, I think, if you start kendo in your later years is to really, really just focus on doing nothing but correct form and just working on the basics. And also to do it... obviously, to the, push yourself, but don't try and copy people that are half your age, because they're doing a different kind of kendo. If you start kendo when you're 30, do 30-year-old kendo. If you start kendo when you're 40, you do 40-year-old kendo. As long as you can do kihon correctly, you can be very strong. And that's what I would, I know some people in Japan who started kendo when they were 60. Bloody hell, you can't do anything against them. Because they also have the added advantage of so much life experience.
Right.
And your life experience is a really important part in how you put together right. your image of kendo in your mind. And if you have a strong image, you'll have strong kendo. So I think first thing is to really just don't worry about all the, the fancy techniques, right. but just learn how to do nice man, nice kote, nice do, and tsuki. The basic techniques, and just really make sure that the form is beautiful. Because as you get older, you realize that kendo kihon basics are really clever, because this is the strongest.
Yeah.
Simple as that. So, yeah, I don't think age really should be a problem for anybody who wants to start kendo. Well, everybody knows the story about the rabbit and the turtle.
Right.
Or the tortoise, right? Okay, and how the tortoise just plummets along, and you got this rabbit, meh. Eventually, who comes out on top? The person who just is strong in their resolve, is disciplined, and knows what they're supposed to be doing, and is strong enough mentally to be able to carry that through.
Right.
Okay, so you can push yourself mentally as much as you can. In fact, you have to push yourself beyond your limits, but physically, it's not really such a problem. See, this question can be answered on many different levels, but I think the most important level is, what do you have to do for sixth dan, and what do you have to do for seventh dan? Well, you have to do sixth dan keiko, and you have to do seventh dan keiko. So when you go into the grading, if you try and do something different than what you always do, because it's a grading examination, you're going to fail, because it's not natural. It's not really a part of your kendo, and it's going to stand out. as being unnatural. It's funny, but it does. You have to show the examiners that you are completely comfortable with what you are doing.
Right.
And that means, and of course you have to be doing what they consider to be nice, strong kendo. So that means that you have to be doing nice, strong kendo, kihon dori.
Right.
The way it should be done, you know, correct kihon, in your everyday training, so that regardless of whether, you know, you're training or you're at an examination or you're in a shio, it's still the same kendo. So, if you want rokudan, you have to do rokudan keko.
Yeah.
And same for nanadan. And if you break that down, okay, so what is nice kendo? Well, for me, it's quite simple. First, it's physically, whether you're before the strike, during the strike, and after the strike, you have to have nice posture, okay? Which means striking from the legs, not the upper body, okay? Strike from the legs, not the upper body, means that you have to be confident. In Japanese, they say, hara ga dekiteru ka douka. So you have to be able, I mean, it's, people often tend to sort of try and strike up here first because, one, they want to try and hit the person, okay? They're only focused on trying to hit the person. And two, because it's one way of protecting you.
Right.
Okay, so the other way, if you go from your legs and you're going in, you sort of feel like you're open. But that's where the strong seme kicks in, because the other person suddenly realizes that you're just about in that spill point, and it's like, whoa! And that's when you strike. And in order to strike with beautiful posture and finish with beautiful posture, also another important factor is the distance, the mai. So if you're striking, when you're young, because you can, you're told to strike from, you know, as far away as you can, bang! You should always try and strike, be able to strike from as far away as you can, but also be able to keep that nice posture. So if you strike from here, if you can strike, but you're going to end up like that, then it's too far away.
Right.
But if you can strike from here and really stretch yourself but still keep nice posture, then that's the best striking distance for you, and that's where your seme will be focused. Okay. Again, the other way, if you get in too close and you strike, then that's no good either. So that posture is really important, which is controlled by distance and using your feet properly. Quite simply, that's the kind of thing that I try and remember in my keiko every day, so that becomes natural even in a grading examination for 6-dan or 7-dan. Well, that's something to do with it, I guess. I mean, the number of people and the higher rank people around them, which they can look at and copy and create images in their mind. But I mean, it seems such a long time ago now, but I don't know if I was doing sandan kendo when I was a sandan. I think it's just a natural course, you know. People and gradings, you know, examinations, sometimes, you know, you get lucky and you pass. Sometimes you should pass and you get unlucky or whatever, and people say, well, you make your own luck. Interestingly, for this 7th dan examination recently, it was different for me compared to all of the other examinations that I've sat, because I wasn't actually really that worried about it. I wasn't even really thinking about it. I went there with the intention, well, you know, I know that nanadan is very hard to pass first time, and I had no expectations, to be honest. I didn't really care. I just went there because I wanted to do to have the experience.
Right.
And I passed. And the reason I probably passed is because I wasn't thinking, oh, nanadan, I have to do my best kendo to pass. I just went in there and did the kendo that I always do. And the kendo that I always do, according to the people who are marking it, is nanadan kendo. So after passing it, gradings are complicated. They mean different things for different people at different stages in their kendo career. Some people will focus on passing the 7th dan or the 8th dan, and that provides them with the motivation to keep training every day. For my 7th dan examination, I wasn't really thinking about that. I knew I would pass it eventually one day, maybe later rather than sooner, who knows. But it just felt like I was able to do my my kendo that I always do without worrying about anything else. So my approach was very different this time because I didn't really have an approach. And so one thing that one of the examiners said to me the next day, I saw Takahashi sensei just by chance, and he goes, "Anshin shite miremashita," which means, you know, even though I was examining you, it felt perfectly natural watching you, and I didn't feel that you were doing
right.
anything silly or stupid, or, you know, it just looked good watching you. Felt good watching you. Okay, and that when he said that, then I felt happy that I passed Nanada. Because that, I think, if you can make the person, or the examiners, feel...
Yeah.
Then that means that you are at that level. And it's like, and I know, because of that, that what I've been doing in my training has been correct. Obviously, it's never going to be perfect.
Right.
But I know from that result that what I've been doing has been correct. It wasn't luck. It was just hard work and focusing on the right things. And now all of a sudden, having said that, I've reached a certain level in my shugyo, in my study of kendo. What now? Well, there's one left. There's Hachidan, right?
Yeah.
10 years' time. And now I realized for the first time that now I can possibly... No, it is my responsibility to myself, you know, for all of the training that I've done now, to actually see if I can bring the absolute best out of myself. I'll bring, you know, and develop the best attributes that I have and try and expel all of the weaknesses that I still have in my kendo and try and reach that pinnacle. And I only have 10 years left before I can start sitting that examination. So even though my nanadan preparation was sort of like different, I think from now on I have to create a 10-year plan of how I can get the best out of the environment that I'm in, the teachers that I have around me, the students, and really try and see if I can reach the highest peak in kendo in terms of technical ability. Whether you pass the Hachidan or not, you know, obviously you have to be confident in what you're doing, and I know that I'm on the right track, but I know that it will also provide me at least this idea of the Hachidan in 10 years' time will keep me honest from now on. So gradings have different meanings for different people at different times. When I took my Shodan, for example, I wanted a souvenir to take back to New Zealand with me. Now it's like, okay, how can I make myself the strongest kendo and the best person that I can? And that's something that maybe have to confront the good, the bad, and the ugly in myself to go the next level in kendo. So, yeah, when you talk about dans and what you have to do to prepare for dans and how you should feel when you finish the dan, I think it just there's too much variation,
right,
in the dan and the person.
Well, I would like to see you in a dan. Well, not in
long
10
way
years.
Off, mate.
Maybe not in 10 years, but sometime in the future. I think you're the closest guy.
Oh, don't know about that, mate. Don't know about that. There's plenty out there.
I mean, yeah, there are plenty. But I'd like to see you getting hit now.
Come with us. A barometer of life. It's a tool for self-development and cultivation.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I <Ayash. laughs>